invite anti-gay, anti-women's choice, the guy that called Christians who care about a social gospel, Marxists. The decision to invite Rick Warren to give his invocation is a mistake. It's a mistake. It's not the end of the world. Obama's not evil. He's not George Bush or Dick Cheney. But he's human. He made a mistake. And I need to call him on it. And I'm going to do so in the second half of the hour. And I want to hear your thoughts as well, because for me it's troubling and yet, well, we'll talk about why he did it, what it means for gay, lesbian people, bisexual, transgendered people, for women, for those who support a woman's right to choose. What does it mean for evangelicals? What does it mean for Obama reaching across the aisle to those who disagree with him? And at the end of the day, can we safely assume that this is mere symbol and we'll be okay when it comes to policy? I'm going to talk about all of that, but first let's get back to Wall Street. Wall Street was the thing I planned to fulminate on all hour. If you've read my blog at RadioInsideScoop.com, you can see that I've already written about it. Obviously, what's gone on Wall Street for a long time, we've talked about the credit derivative swaps. What are they? They're a fancy name for gambling. Gambling not in the millions, not in the billions, not in the trillions, but in the tens of trillions. And just to give you an idea, I mean, our budget deficit is half a trillion. Our whole national debt is $10 trillion. But Wall Street was gambling six times that amount, six times our entire national debt to pay off all the debt that the nation has incurred from the days of George Washington to today. Wall Street was gambling six times that amount in an amount larger than, well, our entire economy. You want to know why our economy is in trouble? Because Wall Street was gambling and they weren't being regulated. So why, in the scope of $65 trillion in credit derivative swaps? Well, we can talk about that. I've talked about that before, but if you want to call in, we could certainly focus on that. Why, in the context of $65 trillion of that, am I focusing on a mere $50 billion in the Ponzi scheme by a supposed hedge fund manager by the name of Bernie Madoff? Because sometimes a small example typifies the whole problem. And to me, Bernie Madoff typified everything that's wrong on Wall Street, in Washington, and in the intersection thereof. Who is Bernie Madoff? What did he do? Well, Bernie Madoff was, until recently, a very respected Jewish community leader. One to whom, in fact, the Jewish community of Washington, D.C. entrusted $10 million. I guess they didn't do as bad as other Jewish leaders and many, many, many non-Jews, such as banks in Switzerland and Sweden, who gave him billions of dollars. And why did all these people give him all this much money? Well, Bernie Madoff was giving them great returns. 1% a month. Every month, in good times and in bad. Now, anyone who can do math recognizes that 1% a month is about 12% a year. In fact, it's a little bit higher than that when you compound the interest. That's a good return on your money. I don't care how good an investor you are, it's hard to earn 12% every year. It's particularly hard to earn 12% in bad times. But Bernie Madoff was paying those returns. Why wouldn't you invest with him? Bernie Madoff was practicing a scheme as old as, well, perhaps the pyramids. It's called a pyramid scheme, or often known as a Ponzi scheme, after the very sneaky swindler at the turn of the century in America, whose last name was Ponzi, P-O-N-Z-I, who tried this same deal. You see, it's very easy to pay off people with extraordinary rates, as long as you do it with other people's money. If you invest in real investments, well, then the money can go, it can come, the market can go up, the market can go down, right? But if you keep bringing in more and more and more people to pay off the original investors, Well, that can keep going until the pyramid grows so large that it must collapse. If you look at a pyramid coming from the top down, the level below the top can pay the top, but it takes ever more investors to pay that level, and then ever more investors and ever more investors until there simply aren't enough investors in the world to pay off all the promises that Bernie Madoff or his mentor, if you will, Ponzi, created 100 years ago. Pyramid schemes must collapse. One of the most famous occurred, by the way, just a few years ago in Romania. After Ceausescu, a bunch of Romanians put money in a bank that was giving these incredible returns, and everyone heard about the good returns, and more people put money in the bank, and the bank was doing the same Ponzi scheme. So it's certainly not Ponzi or Bernie Madoff that are the only ones that have done this scheme. But it's actually a fairly easy one to regulate. You simply make sure that people invest in real companies. You look at trades. One way that Madoff's scheme certainly should have been detected was the fact that he was paying a consistent 1% every month. You simply can't do that in this economy. And maybe so many people made money that they were just closing their eyes to where the money was coming from. And even that's kind of understandable, if stupid, right? We know that, was it Barnum and Bailey that said there's a sucker born a minute? There's lots of suckers around. Look at all the people that get involved in get-rich-quick schemes, the people that'll pay tens of thousands of dollars to someone to teach them how to invest in real estate when they don't have any money to begin with. Yes, there will always be get-rich-quick schemes. There will always be people who click on the internet hoping to get that $100 billion from the Nigerian prince or thinking that they've won the Dutch lottery. But it is the role of the government. It is the role of the police. It is the role of the government agencies that police Wall Street to protect naive people, to protect us from the crooks. Maybe it wasn't naive at all to invest with Bernie Madoff. He'd been around a very long time. He was on the former board of NASDAQ. He, in fact, had relatives at the SEC. If you can't trust him, who can you trust? And I'm sure that he used the Jewish angle to convince all manner of well-meaning Jews to give him lots of money. Again, that's nothing new or distinct to the Jewish community. There are Latinos that prey on naive Latinos who've just come to this country, take advantage of them. There are blacks that do it to blacks. There's any community. And the reason for that, I think, is that if you're in a community, you think, oh, well, I can trust this person. He's of my ethnicity or religion or skin color or language. You know, he's Armenian. I'm Armenian. How bad can he be? Obviously, that was a mistake. But Bernie Madoff was a fairly sophisticated swindler. He certainly had two sets of books, to which he showed to the SEC. How could the SEC possibly have known anything was wrong? Well, for one thing, they were warned. They were warned by a competitor of Madoff, a guy by the name of Harry Markopoulos, a Boston investment professional, who wrote letters to the SEC as early as 1999 saying that Madoff was conducting a Ponzi scheme. In other words, saying exactly what Madoff was doing. But the SEC, they looked at his books, and they looked okay to him, and, well, they didn't, you know, subpoena the documents to find if the documents were backing up the books, because I guess that would be rude. And no, the staff didn't give concerns to the agency's leadership. Why not? The real question is not what happened to Bernie Madoff. There will always be swindlers. There will always be crooks and embezzlers. The real question is, what happened to the SEC? What happened to the Securities and Exchange Commission? Why weren't they watching the crooks? And the answer is actually very simple. Because those in government didn't want them to. Here's the part of the story that isn't reported in the press, but one I know firsthand from my time in Congress. When I worked in Congress, the Republicans were doing their best to lower the salary of the employees of the SEC and the IRS to boot. Why would Republicans insist that the salary of lawyers at the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Internal Revenue Service, why should they be low? Why would you ever want to lower the salaries on cops? Well, I guess the same reason you would want to lower the salary on teachers. If you don't like what they're doing, you don't care for what they're doing, then you don't want good people to go into that business. You see, the SEC has a fundamental imbalance, much like an arms imbalance, with the crooks it tries to regulate. The crooks it tries to regulate have not hundreds of thousands, not millions, not tens of millions, not hundreds of millions, but sometimes billions of dollars. And they can afford to pay the brightest swindlers in the book, millions of dollars, to practice their schemes to hide the ball. Now, in this battle of intelligence, and that's what it is, it's a battle of intelligence. In this battle of intelligence, you need to hire equally intelligent lawyers to unearth the schemes. You can't have people that are duped by, oh, we looked at the books, everything looked fine. But the way Republicans tried to make it is that a lawyer fresh out of law school going to one of these big investment banking firms or lawyers protecting those firms would make two, three, four times as much as a new SEC lawyer. And so it shouldn't surprise you to know that the lawyers going in the SEC generally weren't as qualified as those that went into private business. It's the same reason why, let's face it, I'm not a teacher and I became a lawyer. Not because I devalue teachers, but because our society devalues teachers, and they pay lawyers a lot more. So the only people that join the SEC are like the only people who become criminal defense attorneys and are actually very good at it. And they're rare. They're the true believers. Those who want to reform society, those who want to make society a better place. And how many people like that do we have on earth? How many people like that do we have in the United States? Most people will simply go where they make more money. That's why we have such lousy criminal defense attorneys. That's why we have such lousy legal aid attorneys. A few true believers, and most of them, frankly, couldn't get a job on the other side. So we worked in Congress to raise the salaries so that the SEC could attract the best people, so that the IRS could attract the best people. If you pay your taxes lawfully and on time, you shouldn't fear the IRS. Indeed, when the IRS has more watchdogs and can go after a bunch of rich people who don't pay their taxes, they make money. For every $100,000 the government spends on an IRS attorney, the government makes some $10 million. That's 100 times on your return. Who wouldn't want that kind of deal? The same is true at the SEC. The Republicans were fighting over tens of thousands of dollars per lawyer. A few paltry million per year. And just think, just Bernie Madoff alone swindled $50 billion. For $50 million, is it a good idea to save $50 billion? Of course it is. Of course it is. If you simply look at the numbers, cops on the beat and the SEC and the IRS make the government money. The only reason you could not want the cops is if you support the crimes. Or if those criminals finance your campaign. And now the Republicans are shocked. Shocked, like the police officer in Casablanca. Shocked to find out that gambling's going on. Shocked to find out that fraud's going on. Shocked to find out that swindles are going on. At the place where they insisted that their low-cost government cops, the ones that couldn't make it into the big field of private lawyering, that they're the ones on the beat. Now, don't get me wrong. There are, as I said, a few true believers. They're at the SEC. They're at the IRS. They're in legal aid. People who are willing to sacrifice the big bucks to do what they think is right. But sadly, there just aren't enough of them. And so Wall Street, having no real cops on the beat, hired their own private rent-a-cops. What were their names? Moody's, Standard & Poor's. They were called the credit rating agencies. Wall Street paid the credit rating agencies. And the credit rating agencies, in turn, declared that all these credit derivative swaps, all the $65 trillion, all of that was AAA rated, the highest possible rating. It would never default. And, of course, it did. And now we're shocked, shocked to find out that the people who are being paid to give a good rating gave a good rating, even though it didn't deserve the good rating. So why did Bernie Madoff succeed? Why did Enron succeed in manipulating electricity prices? Why did oil speculators succeed in manipulating their prices? Because there were no cops on the beat. The only people monitoring these companies was the free market. And you know what? The free market does some things well and some things wrong. One of the things they don't do well is when they don't have accurate information, the free market can't process it. And who ensures that the information is accurate? Why, it's the cops on the beat. It's the SEC. It's the government. You know, even if you believe in biblical law, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more when we get to Rick Warren in the next half of the hour. Even under biblical law, one of the best rules, early rules in the Bible, that's carried on into our Constitution, is the idea that the government has to regulate weights and measures. Sound boring to you? It's crucial. Crucial to an honest economy. You got to make sure that the thing that says it weighs a pound actually weighs a pound, because if it weighs 15 ounces rather than 16 ounces, and you put it up against a sack of grain, you can sell what you call a pound of grain and only give 15 sixteenths of the amount. Skim a bit off the top. It's as old as the Bible. Honest dealing, an honest economy, honest weight and measures, honest profits are all determined by a government, the same government that the Republicans have done so much to make sure is as weak as possible. So what's the answer? What's the answer? The Wall Street Journal says, there will always be swindlers like Bernie Madoff. That's true. There will always be con men. He was particularly good at it. That's all true. So, you know, we just shrug our shoulders and let him go his own way. What? That's your conclusion, Wall Street Journal? No, there's actually an easy solution. The easy solution is to not make the cops be paid for by the criminals they're supposed to watch. Credit ratings agencies, the people that tell you whether bonds are good or not, are paid for by the people who put out the bonds. Oops. The people who talk about whether hedge funds are good or bad are paid for by those same hedge funds. Oops. The people who traded these credit derivative swaps, who put out this so-called insurance for subprime mortgages, they're the same people who told you it was good, are the same people who profit by the fact that you buy it. The snake oil salesman, yes, makes a profit on every bit of snake oil he sells you. So all you have to do is break the chain. All you have to do is make sure that the cops are not being paid for by the criminals. Because if the mafia is buying you protection, how much protection are you really getting? But you say Wall Street has the money to pay for these people, and we're struggling right now with heavy deficits. Easy answer. Tax Wall Street. You still make Wall Street pay for it. But instead of Wall Street deciding who their cops will be, you tax them. You put it in a fund, and the government decides who the police will be. And I'm going to go one step further. How about a reward for the policemen for catching fraud. You know, there's something in the law. It's very obscure. A lot of people don't know about it. It's called a qui tam action. It's a obscure way to bring a lawsuit. Basically, a qui tam action is when you bring a lawsuit in someone else's name. It's if you see fraud, you sue on behalf of the government, and if you're right, if there is fraud, you get a piece of the pie. You want to reward cops? If they catch fraud, give them a little piece of the pie. Now, you have to prove it. Obviously, if the cop's involved in the fraud, I mean, that could lead to all kinds of problems, too. So we have to be a little careful about that. But in general, we have to break the back of cops being owned by the companies. The cops should be antithetical to the companies. When they arrive, the companies should be nervous if they've committed fraud. And what do? To buy the best, most sophisticated cops money can buy? Well, we may have to nationalize Moody's, Standard & Poor's. Who knows? They're not going to be worth much anyway because all the people that have lost money are going to sue them, and they won't be worth anything anymore anyway. Maybe we should just throw all the bums out and start anew. But the Madoff scandal, like the credit derivative swaps, like the Enron scandal, like the oil speculation, tells us that this kind of gambling has to be regulated. I support allowing people to gamble with small stakes. You know, I support internet poker. But it's quite one thing to gamble where you know the rules of the game and it's a fair game. And quite another when people are lying to each other and making you believe things are fair when, let's face it, they're simply not. We should never have a cop paid for by the criminal that the cop is supposed to regulate. We need to raise the salaries of lawyers at the SEC and the IRS so they can compete. And if you're not a crook, how could you possibly have a problem with that? That's all I have to say on this topic, although I should tell you this is what I plan to spend the entire hour on. Still, I feel like I'm going to need a little more time to deal with the invocation that Rick Warren's going to give on Inauguration Day, which I plan to attend, which is really going to be very interesting and troubling for me. When we come back, we'll talk about that, and also I'll encourage you to call in and give me your thoughts. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. I don't know why we need any religious leader delivering an invocation at a president's inaugural. I thought we're supposed to have separation of church and state here. But the custom persists, and Obama announced on Wednesday that the Reverend Rick Warren would be giving the invocation on January 20th. This has understandably ignited a firestorm of protest from Obama's progressive base. For one thing, Warren's anti-abortion. For another, he threw his considerable weight behind Proposition 8, outlawing gay marriage in California. Warren likened it to incest, child abuse, and polygamy. The victory of the forces of intolerance in California struck a cruel blow to gays and lesbians not only there, but around the country. And Warren played no small part in it and in other campaigns against gay marriage. So why in the world is Obama inviting him to bless the inauguration? During the campaign, Obama somehow felt the need to genuflect before Warren in a town hall meeting with McCain, but he was under no obligation to do so at his own inaugural, which Warren is already in the process of marring. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine. I'm talking about the Ponzi scheme of Bernie Madoff and also about Barack Obama's choice of Rick Warren to give the invocation at the inauguration. Got Kevin on the line. Kevin, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, it's been a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah. I just want to say, as far as, well, I don't even care about Rick Warren, but it's like what I care. The Ponzi scheme this guy put on is nothing compared to the Ponzi scheme Alan Greenspan and Arthur Laffer put on.
Well, that's right.
Years.
I mean, it's a small microcosm of a much bigger problem. As I said, it's $50 billion versus the $65 trillion and the credit derivative swap scandal that no one can understand. See, people can get their arms around this Ponzi scheme. They can't even fathom what happened in the side bets and on the subprime mortgages.
Oh, well, not even that. This whole nation has been run on a Ponzi scheme since Reagan came in.
That you're right. We're borrowing a ton of money, and we have to pay it back someday. So in that sense, you're absolutely right.
Okay, but if you look at it, working people have not had a real raise since the 70s. So
they did do better in the 90s. Working people were better off on a real level in the 1990s. That's true.
Okay, well, that's been all eaten up.
It has.
Yeah, but the thing is just that a lot of stuff out there, there's been no real wealth accumulated. You know, a lot of it is paper. You know, we're no longer making things. You know, I like to go back to the Adam Smith principle of Wealth of Nations, where you take a piece of wood, carve it, polish it, and make it into an axe handle, which is now worth something. You know, it's like the dot-com boom. A lot of the stuff out there, they had all these dot-com companies, which were worth billions of dollars, and it all collapsed because at the end of the day, they had nothing selling that was worth anything.
Well, and what we were doing in this case is everyone was selling these bets on subprime mortgages, and it wasn't regulated, and it turns out that, no, there was nothing backing it up.
Yeah, and what they wanted to go after that was the Social Security.
Right.
That's what
they And they also want to go after America's pensions and health care, and that's why they were trying to destroy unions last Friday.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, the Ponzi scheme that this guy is going through, so what a couple of charities and rich people got ripped off, you know, hey, they should have known better. But
you know what it is, though? It's a symbol of the overall problem that I was talking about. And we just don't have cops on the beat, and that's regulation. That's SEC, that's IRS. And the reason we don't is we simply don't pay them enough to have good people, smart people. And listen, you need very smart people sometimes to catch very smart crooks. And to do that, you have to pay them enough so they want to do this kind of work. This is the exact argument we were making 6 years ago as they were cutting the salaries of, you know, people who, for the most part, are dedicated public servants. But let's face it, they're overworked and underpaid.
Yeah. And it's the same, man. You know, this country's getting what it deserves. Whatever happens now, they're getting what it deserves. Okay? You know, it's about time America got off of this empire-building nonsense. You know? And put it to you this way. What's happening to America now has happened in the third world for years.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
It's happened in America before. It's not just the third world.
Yeah, but I guess it's reinventing itself. Now, and you know,
it will keep coming until one day we have a government that regulates this kind of thing. It's that simple.
Yeah. Well, we had a government that regulated, but it was bankrupt under 30 some odd years of conservative ideology.
I hear you. Kevin, I'm going to move on because I want to go on and talk about Rick Warren, if that's okay.
Okay, so,
but thanks very much for your call.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
I appreciate it. I want to take a quick break because I need to prepare the clips that I have for Rick Warren. So we'll just take a really quick break, if that's okay, Bob, and we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 600 Teamsters drivers are in the 12th week of their strike at Oak Harbor Freight in Portland, Oregon. It's a defense of pension and retiree health benefits that the company wants to replace with benefits that are worth less. Marv Deegan is a Teamster retiree at Oak Harbor Freight. He says this is another battle in the war on the middle class.
It's definitely an attack on the middle class. As this trend continues, the wages will continue to come down and the benefits will continue to come down. And it just continues to bring the middle class down to a point where we'll be lucky if we have any kind of benefits at all.
Deegan's health care premium recently went from $300 a month to more than $900. With Christmas coming in the midst of a financial crisis, Deegan says many strikers are struggling to survive.
12 weeks, that's an extremely long strike, and most of them are struggling right now, really beginning to struggle. Some of them are probably losing their homes. Of course, Christmas is something that's out of the question. Most of them right now, too, have no health insurance.
Oak Harbor Freight ships merchandise to the Gap, Old Navy, and Banana Republic stores. To support the strike, go to oakharborteamsters.com. The axe has fallen for one of four Cooper Tire plants. Jesse Russell reports.
The company had been working with the plant since October to conduct capacity studies in an attempt to determine which plant should be closed. On Wednesday, it was announced the plant in Albany, Georgia would be shuttered and the plant's 1,400 jobs would be cut. Plants will remain open in Texarkana and Findlay, Arkansas, and Tupelo, Mississippi. The Findlay and Texarkana plants offer new contract concessions in order to preserve their jobs. The process to close the Albany factory will take 12 months, and in the meantime, production at the three other plants will be ramped up to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Aetna announced on Wednesday that it would be cutting 1,000 jobs in an attempt to reduce costs. The employees will be let go by year's end, with the most coming from Aetna's home state of Connecticut. 375 jobs will be cut in the New England state, with an additional 165 coming from Pennsylvania and the rest from various offices around the country. Aetna has experienced a great deal of growth during the last 18 months, adding more than 5,000 jobs.
Here is today's economic report. AAA is projecting a decline in holiday travel this year. According to the organization, 2% less Americans will travel 50 miles or less this holiday season. That's the first decline since 2002. Air travel will see the largest decline, falling 9% as compared to the same time last year. Travel by automobile will slip only 1%.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Well, here's the part that I wasn't looking forward to. It's very easy to bash the Bush administration about their failure to do regulation. It's something that I do all the time. The harder task is to go after the new president-elect for his mistake. And I think it's a big mistake, but I do think it's a mistake. And not, as of yet, a fundamental change in character. The mistake of inviting Rick Warren to give the invocation at his inauguration. You know, when I first thought of the idea, I thought of all the young people in America, particularly the youngest, you know, 18, 20 years old, 16 years old, 22 years old, the people that stayed up all night going door to door, working the phones in the primary campaign, the general election campaign. And I thought of the tears in their eyes, of the anguish in their heart, that Barack Obama would choose a person who has compared gay people getting married to incest, to polygamy, who's compared abortion to the Holocaust. The Holocaust. A person that says that those that advocate social change are just Marxists with a Christian faith. And I was thinking about how those people feel. The people that felt that Obama was really going to change things. And yet I know that this is a symbolic move. This is a political move. This is exactly the kind of cynical politics that Barack Obama said he wouldn't do, but that he, like all politicians, has to practice. Barack Obama has said that he's reaching out to the evangelical community, and he is. He is. He also has said that he has to talk with people that he disagrees with, and he does. He certainly does. I can't think of any progressive that would have any problem with him sitting down and talking with Rick Warren about where they agree and where they disagree. Heck, he wants to talk with Iranian President Ahmadinejad. We're okay with that too. But this guy, Rick Warren, he's not James Dobson. He's probably more dangerous. He's James Dobson with a friendly face. He's like Mike Huckabee, who, for all I dislike his policies, I have to admit, seems an awfully likable guy. And thus, that makes him more dangerous. And yet, to Obama's credit, this isn't the only prayer given at the inauguration. The other person giving the benediction, the other prayer, is Reverend Joseph Lowery, a leader in the civil rights movement, head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, someone who firmly supports the right of gay people to get married. And, you know, it kind of made me think back to the civil rights era, to even the pre-civil rights era, to the time of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington was one of the first blacks to actually get an audience with the President of the United States. He actually got to speak have coffee with Teddy Roosevelt, even. And that was a big plus for its time. Now, since that time, obviously, Booker T. Washington was reviled in the African-American community as a sellout, as an Uncle Tom. But for his time, that was the best he could get. Is this the best we can hope for at this time? Probably. Almost certainly. We still have Californians, 52%, who don't think we should have equal rights under the law. And for all of this, I'm hopeful. I'm not willing to say F Barack Obama, as so many have on the blogs. I'm sad rather than angry. I feel like if Barack Obama hired more gay people on his staff, or at least more people who truly, truly believe in their heart of hearts that all men and women are equal under the law, that he never would have done this. I think that Barack Obama is reaching out to a very large political community, the evangelical community. They have a lot of votes. But does he really think he's going to fool them with this symbolic move? Maybe that's exactly what he thinks, that he can fool them with this symbolic move. And it is symbolic, and at the end of the day, let's face it, Rick Warren will, I'm sure, not mention gay people or abortion in his invocation. It is a mere prayer. If he does, there will be an extreme uproar, and I'm sure that the transition team will look at the speech before he gives it. That's not going to happen. It's a sop. It's a bone thrown to the religious right. The religious right, which complains that George Bush only threw them sops and bones, and Ronald Reagan did. Are they going to follow Obama's? And then let's say Obama continues to do the right thing. After all, the thing that he campaigned on was not putting Rick Warren in an invocation. It was equal rights for all. Getting rid of the ban on gays in the military. Allowing gay couples to have equal rights under the law, even if they don't call it marriage. Allowing gay people not to be beaten up, or transgendered people not to be crucified merely because they exist. We exist. Allowing gay people to have the same rights, and transgender people to have the same rights in the workplace as straight people. These things that Barack Obama has campaigned on, we need to hold him to his feet to the fire. Maybe this is a shrewd political move, right? Maybe he is simply throwing a sop, a bone to the right, and when the gay community and those that believe in fairness for all get very, very upset, then he'll have the political cover he needs to pass employment non-discrimination, to get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, to get rid of the Defense of Marriage Act, all of which he's told us in his campaign he'll do. Maybe it's a brilliant political move to triangulate, something worthy of Dick Morris and Bill Clinton. Maybe. Maybe it's too clever by half. I don't think the religious right will fall for it. If, as I hope, as I pray, as I still expect, by the way, Barack Obama keeps his political promises, throws a sop to the homophobe, throws a sop to the bigot, allows the bigot to give an invocation, and at the same time truly promotes equality under the law, truly respects the 14th Amendment, allows gay people equal rights under the law, then I'll be satisfied. I won't mention Rick Warren's name again. This is nothing like 1993, where Bill Clinton brought on Don't Ask, Don't Tell and DOMA. And Bill Clinton, let's face it, was the greatest president to gay people that we've ever had. Just as John F. Kennedy was the greatest president to African Americans that we'd ever had up to that point. But blacks didn't have full equality by the time Kennedy died. Heck, Truman was the best one up to that point, and Roosevelt was the best one up to that point, right? So progress, I know, is slow. And I still believe that Barack Obama is better than Bill Clinton and is for more equality for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people than any president before him. And that is good, and that is true not so much because of Obama, but because of the changes in the country. Because young people just aren't homophobic anymore. And Barack Obama has gone as far as he can go, given the political winds. I actually think Barack Obama would support the right of gay people to get married if he didn't feel that it was politically suicide. And the other person that he hired to give the benediction, Joseph Lowry, does support same-sex marriage. So what do we do? Well, the first thing I think that Barack Obama will find is that this sop to the right won't work. If he believes that the right wing will be satisfied with symbols, he's dead wrong. They won't be satisfied with symbols. They weren't satisfied with symbols under the last administration. And so I've come to the conclusion that Rick Warren is to Barack Obama as Sarah Palin was to John McCain. Recall how John McCain, why he chose Sarah Palin. He chose Sarah Palin because, he said, she would get more women to support the ticket. The idea was it was a symbol. Palin was a symbol for women. And even though Palin was anti-choice, and even though she didn't support women's rights, and even though she was not progressive on anything, McCain thought, incorrectly, by the way, that liberals, women, would support her merely because she's a woman and not notice the fact that she's opposed to everything that progressive women believe in. I suspect that Barack Obama is playing the same cynical politics. Maybe the religious right will see the invocation of Rick Warren and not notice that, well, let's face it, they don't support any of the policies Barack Obama supports. Maybe they won't notice that he actually believes that a woman has a right to choose what to do with her own body. Maybe they won't notice that he believes that gay people should have equal rights under the law. I don't think it's going to work. I think the right wing will recognize that it's a mere symbol. So why do it? Well, Obama has talked a lot about reaching out. And I respect that. I believe in talking to people who disagree with you. You know that. That's the reason I bring people like Mike Lane on my show all the time. I believe we have to hear each other. We have to talk to each other. And Rick Warren does some good, folks. I hate to admit that. But on issues like poverty, despite the fact that he calls liberal Christian leaders Marxists, he actually does work to help end poverty. And, you know, to say Rick Warren is not as bad as James Dobson, you know, I don't know what that means. After all, Rick Warren has admitted that he has the exact same views as James Dobson. He just expresses it in a nicer way. I'm trying to pull up for you Warren's comments on Proposition 8, and I'm going to do that as soon as I can. But let me just say this. It seems to me that I'm doing two things at once. That's always hard to do. It seems to me that Warren is not as bad as some on the far right, but the things he says should be beyond the pale. I mean, when you compare abortion to the Holocaust, when you say, in effect, that a woman choosing not to have a child at a time when it's a blastocyst is equivalent to the Nazi murder of 6 million Jews and 6 million others in gas chambers, what you're really saying is that the women who have abortions need to be killed, and quickly. Who would doubt that the morally correct choice for any of us, should we have a gun and find ourselves transported into a death camp in the 1940s, who would doubt that the morally correct choice would be to shoot as many of the death camp guards as possible, to kill the murderers before they could murder more, to execute as many Nazis as possible, to save as many lives as possible? It's an obvious moral choice. But to compare abortion to Hitler is to suggest that someone needs to go on a rampage and start killing these women now. Well, I got news for you. I have women who've had abortions in my family. You've had women who've had abortions in your family. Perhaps you're a woman who's had an abortion. It's not such a clear moral choice. And while I'm more than willing to work with the religious right to reduce abortions, and I am, by teaching contraception, by teaching sex education, I'm really worried about a man who teaches that abortion is equivalent to the Nazis. Now, again, to be fair, Warren is not as bad as Falwell. Warren is not as bad as Dobson. One of the things Warren said, and maybe this is all part of Barack Obama's classic plan, one of the things Warren said in one of the clips that I'm having trouble pulling up is that he supports equal rights for gay people. He's got gay friends. The same mythical gay friends, I guess, that Sarah Palin has. He didn't give any names, nor could he. What self-respecting gay person would admit to being friends with Rick Warren? He's even eaten in gay homes. Gay homes. What's a gay home? Does it look different from a straight home? Is it pink? He's got gay friends. He loves gay people. He just doesn't want them to have equal rights. And I have to say, that's mighty white of him. Mighty white of him. There were segregationists that didn't hate black people, had black people in their homes, just made them, you know, drink out of their hands and made sure they couldn't have equal rights. Rick Warren is a vestige of the past. He is better than other religious homophobes. I'll grant you that. He's done good work on AIDS. He's done good work on poverty. Barack Obama should meet with him. I'd be willing to meet with him. I'd be willing to have him on my show. But meeting with someone you disagree with and putting that person up there as a symbol of your presidency, those are different things. And I realize a very good man, Joseph Lowery, is also a symbol up there. And I realize that Obama's reaching out, but I just don't think it'll work. Obama will not appease the religious right unless he gives up on the symbols and gives them the things that they want. Making gay people second-class citizens. Imprisoning or maybe the death penalty for women that have abortions, I don't know. And Obama's not going to do that. And if he does, well, then I and everyone will turn against him. The better symbol is to work with Rick Warren, and I support this, on AIDS, on poverty. I'm okay with that. But not to use him as a symbol of your presidency. On the other hand, let me be clear, I want to work for the guy. I want to work for Barack Obama. I hope I'm not shooting myself in the foot right now. I do think if he had more gay people on staff, he might have been able to predict the firestorm that would occur. So I'm going to go to the inauguration, and I'm going to celebrate. I'm going to celebrate everything but Rick Warren's invocation. At that point, I don't know what I'll do. Some people are turning their backs to the stage. I don't know what I'll do. Because I've always believed that we should be tolerant to those we disagree with. That we should be tolerant to everyone on this planet except those that preach intolerance. And that's what Rick Warren is preaching. I'll tell you this, though. It may be a brilliant political move. Rick Warren has said, and I have no doubt that he's lying through his teeth, but Rick Warren has said that he supports giving gay people equal rights, just not the big M, the marriage word. Yeah? Okay, Rick Warren. Let's have a bill to make civil unions have all the rights of marriage. Let's have a bill to have not just separate but equal. Pure equality. I'll take Plessy v. Ferguson. Let's have full equality under the law so that gay people who join civil unions and straight people who join civil unions have equal rights under the law. And marriages will be left to churches. We won't touch your marriage. You can marry whoever you want, Rick Warren. Would you support that, Rick Warren? You say you would. Terrific. If giving the invocation to Rick Warren at the inauguration in turn gets Rick Warren to support full equality civil unions, giving gay people the exact same rights that straight people have under America, I will not only praise Barack Obama's decision today, I will praise Rick Warren. I don't believe Rick Warren for a second. One of the reasons you know he's lying is because he did commercials on Proposition 8 saying ridiculous things like, if you allow gay people equal rights under the law, then ministers in churches will be punished for hate speech. Huh? Does that even make sense in anyone's mind? Now, I don't believe Rick Warren is so ignorant and so stupid as to actually believe that lie that he spouted. I don't think he's that dumb. Maybe he is. Maybe he's just a dumb, ignorant preacher who actually believes if you give gay people equal rights under the law, that somehow policemen will invade churches and arrest ministers for calling for gay persecution. You know what, though? They still can. The Ku Klux Klan can still march. If you want to persecute gay people, you can call for it in your church, whether or not gay people have equal rights under the law. So I think Rick Warren knows that, and I think he's lying about it, just as I think he's lying when he says he wants equal rights for gay people. After all, the Mormons in California put up a campaign that says, vote to deny gay people marriage, we're okay with civil unions. So people say, you're okay with civil unions? Great, we'll go to Utah, and we'll insist on civil unions. And the Mormons just said, nope, we were lying. We don't really believe in gay equality. We just think that, well, civil unions in California is less bad than marriage, but we're not going to allow gay people in Utah to have any kind of rights under the law? Are you kidding me? This is Utah. So what am I to do in the last minute that I have? I recognize it's a mistake. I recognize he's human. I also recognize Barack Obama is the best president for equality and progressive causes that we've ever had. It's just a symbol. Let's hope it remains that way. And we can all celebrate January 20th together. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have a comment, post it on my website, radioinsidescoop.com. This is Mark Levine, signing off.